You didn't start a home services business because you needed a job. No, you're going somewhere, building something you own. And the fun is only getting started because you're now a member of an elite brigade of service professionals called Guys in Trucks. It's the Guys in Trucks podcast, the show for hardworking blue-collar service business owners who aren't afraid to take care of business. Each week, you'll hear from experts in blue-collar service industries just like yours. Authors, speakers, and successful business owners who may just have that gold nugget you need to get you to your dreams. So buckle up, Git Nation. It's time to take care of business with your hosts, Carter Harkins and Taylor Hill.
This week on the show, we talk with Angela Blaha. If you're stressed out, if you can't make clear decisions, if you can't shut your mind off at the end of a crazy day so you can actually maybe get a decent night's sleep for once, you're going to love meeting Angela. All that coming up on GIT. Welcome back to another episode of the Guys in Trucks Show. It's the show that's all about living the blue-collar business dream. If you can dream the business you want, you can build the business you want. And I absolutely believe that's true, and so does Taylor. My name's Carter Harkins. With me every week is Taylor Hill.
How you doing today?
Good, man. Let's get right into it. I think this is going to be one of those shows that I think has just packed with value. And I think it's going to change some minds, too, because I know, you know, there was a time when I didn't think meditation was anything.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
I know.
I remember that.
And that's been a total reversal. We'll get into that when we talk with Angela here in a little bit, and that's going to be a great interview. But I want to talk about decision-making. One of the things I said just right then in the intro to the show, you know, if you can't make clear decisions, that's difficult. And I know a lot of people, and we've met a lot of business owners, you know, blue-collar guys who are like, man, I mean, put me in front of a challenge, you know, in a customer's home, and I'm going to figure it out, and I'm going to make it happen, and we're going to come up with a solution. We're going to get it done. I can make decisions there. What I can't make decisions about is when I'm back in the office, and I'm staring at QuickBooks, or I'm, you know, wrestling with an employee problem or something like that. Do I let this person go? Do I try to give them one more chance? You know, those kinds of questions. They're like, man, I'm lost in that world. I don't know what to do there. I can't get the clarity I need to make a good decision. So let's talk about decision making, because I think that's something I'm going to confess you're better at than me. You're quicker at than me.
I don't know if I'm better at it, but I tend to be of the ilk that says better to make a decision and do something than to sit and just let things fester.
Right. Yeah.
So whether my decisions is right or wrong, and I think I got this probably just growing up, because both my mother and dad made really good decisions. I mean, they were administrators and teachers and that kind of stuff. And so I was modeled really well. My granddad, too, same thing. And one of the things that, and I don't know who to give this to, but I just kind of learned it maybe innately, that if you make a wrong decision, it's okay. You can always decide to do something else.
Right.
But to make no decision and just let things just go, that makes me really uncomfortable. Because what it says to me is, I'm not doing anything to solve a problem. Mm-hmm. At least if I make a decision, I am trying to solve a problem. I'm going to do something to solve the problem.
Right.
And if that doesn't work, then I'm going to do something else, you know? So it's not that you make a decision and then it's like, oh, no. You know, a decision in business is a little bit different. If you're driving and there's somebody in the left-hand lane and you decide to get in that lane while they're there, that can be a deadly decision, okay?
Sure.
You can't undo that decision, maybe. You might be able to if you live.
But very few decisions are life and death like that.
Very few decisions are life and death like that. And I think sometimes we get frozen in our inability to make the perfect decision. It's the perfectionism.
Perfectionism. We've talked about that before.
Yeah. And so, and I think that is part of why people get stuck, because they think that if I make the wrong decision, I'm going to suffer the consequences, and you will, but you can make another decision.
Sure.
You really can.
Yeah, you can. So one of the things that I've noticed just in the way, my style of making decisions, when somebody mm-hmm. comes to me and asks me what we should do, I want to gather up in my head like all the details and all the possible solutions and choices. And sometimes if I don't feel like I know all the possible solutions and choices that are, you know, really there, then I don't feel like I'm ready to make that decision yet. So my mom's husband he's done very well for himself, mm-hmm. incredibly well for himself, but he is very, very principled and slow and methodical in his decision-making process. And my mom will say, you know, there's no rush in him. There is absolutely no pushing him to make a decision. He will mm-hmm. make the decision when he's ready. And so, you know, in talking with him and watching the way that he does it, that's exactly how it is. It's like you can see the wheels turning. And he's like, in his mind, I can picture he's walking into a room and looking on display of every single possibility and every single thing that is a factor in this decision, and then rearranging those things in his mind until he's got very clear, almost like pros and cons and, you know, whatever other objectives he's using. And it may take him days mm-hmm. of just silent contemplation. He's not a verbal processor, Mom says. He's not somebody who, you know, is just going to talk it through with someone and then quickly, or even over a period of time, make a decision. He just like goes into this room in his head, this place where he figures it out.
Sure.
And then he emerges and says, this is the decision. And once he's made that decision, Mom said, well, if you don't like it, that's tough, because it's
that's where you're going.
You don't get invited into yep. the room.
That's where we're going on vacation, whether we like it or not.
But, yeah. You know, I think it's, you know, that's just, it's one way of making a decision.
Sure.
Now, in my head, I don't necessarily have a room, but I do want to, like, imagine or kind of pull up all the different ways that this might turn out, the implications of this decision. And sometimes that just bogs me down. And I think, you know, there's this balance between needing all the data and just making an intuitive choice.
Well, you know, I think you have to do both. The thing with me is very seldom do I feel like I have all the data, because I don't think all the data is available.
Right.
I mean, sometimes you can't get all the data. And so if it's not available, then you have to just do the best you can with what you got in front of you. The other thing is, you know, there are also things that happen along the way. And here's kind of, this may sound bad, and people that know me may go, uh-huh, all right. But I keep track of things and people in my head really well. I mean, that's...
You do it in your head? Because it's just dawned on me, I don't think I've ever seen you make a pros and cons list.
No, I don't do that. But I have a pros and cons always. It's kind of like the bank accounts,
yeah,
you know, that
the
I
running
always,
tally in your
the
head.
The running tallies in my head. I have running tallies on should, shouldn't, you know, best, worst case, you know, those kind of things. And so I almost always walk in and know in my head what is the worst case scenario going to happen, what's the best case scenario going to happen, and know that I've got to deal with whatever falls in between those two parameters.
Right.
But I, you know, when dealing with people and personalities and stuff, I mean, I have lists, and it's not that I have grudges. I want to make sure that understood. But I keep tallies of what people do, how they act, what's going on, how, you know, and I keep them, these running tallies, for years sometimes. I mean, it's really a strange thing. I can go back and I've got an entire, probably 8 sheet full with my brother that's just a running tally of good, bad, you know, this, that, you know, tit for tat, whatever you want to call it. And so from that tally, when I deal with him, I kind of know how I'm going to deal with him on any set thing, because I know how he's reacted or acted before. Now, that doesn't mean that I don't test the waters, because I don't ever want to hold somebody and put them in a box where they can't change their spots,
sure,
or stripes, yeah, if you will. But, you know, when you deal with people all the time, you do have to deal with them in a way that, I mean, you have to learn. It's a learning thing. I mean, I do that with you. You
sure.
know that.
Well, it's experience,
I mean,
right? We're benefiting from previous experience.
So you have to benefit from that. And so a lot of times when you're in certain circumstances, you have to look back at your experiences with these types of personalities. If somebody is, I don't know, codependent, if somebody is, has an anger issue, if somebody doesn't always do what they're going to do or doesn't show up on time or, you know, just habitual things. And you know, well, I've dealt with that before in another person. Let me see if that will help here. And that also kind of leads in my decision-making process because I very quickly kind of go through my folders of dealing with this before. What is kind of like this or, you know what I'm, does that make sense?
Sure.
And try to pull from that experience and test it out on what I'm dealing with and see if I can poke around enough to know what's the best way to deal with an employee or deal with a banker or, you know, whatever it is.
So one of the things that I know for me that is one of the most clarifying things that I do when I need to make a decision, especially a hard decision, because it seems like, you know, the hard decisions are the ones that really get to, like, what do I want?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the outcome that I want here? You know, and the decision is, will this thing that I'm thinking of doing cause me to get what I want or move me further away from what I want? So for me, having strong core values, defined core values, and really clear defined goals, it's a quick way, it's a shortcut way of just saying, okay, how does this decision, if I go this direction, does it move me closer to my goals? Is it in alignment with my core values as a human being? If it is, then of course, that's something that I can proceed with mm-hmm. and feel good about. Even if it doesn't work out, it's headed in a direction that's not going to create inner turmoil and conflict in myself. And if it's, you know, and many times just asking myself, what are my values and my goals here? Immediately helps to put a new light on the decision in front of me and make it a much easier decision.
Well, and I think that holds true in some cases, but I also think that there are times that you make decisions that you need to make decisions that make you squirm and uncomfortable because you got to get out of your comfort zone.
Sure.
So in that sense, I totally agree with you. When I'm squeamish about something and really uncomfortable, that's when I normally say, okay, where is this getting me? Is this getting me out of that comfort zone to get me closer to my goals and dreams?
Well,
or
so for me, one of my stated goals is to always look for opportunities that lie just beyond what I'm comfortable with.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's a guiding principle for me. A value mm-hmm. and a goal is always be willing to say yes to something that feels scary. And there's times, I mean, recently where we've done that and it has been uncomfortable, but then mm-hmm. suddenly it feels really good and really natural. And oh my gosh, the opportunities are amazing. So, you know, it's that I think is a great goal for anybody.
Sure. I just, you know, I think there's a lot of people that have never stopped and thought about what their core values are. And I don't mean to ruffle feathers. So many of us were born in the United States, so we brought up with a Christian value, a set of Christian values. I'm not here to talk religion. That's just the value that we start out with. But you and I both know there are people that don't follow those values. They'll tell you they are, but they really don't.
Well, you got to wonder, what are those values?
Because
what
that's
one
what
person
I'm
means
saying.
By that and what another person means
by that
can be radically different. And they use the same Christian values, quote unquote, to describe
exactly.
what they're
talking
about.
So I think you have to do a little soul searching and know, you know, who you are, really know who you are, know what you stand for, know what you're going to stand against, what you will not tolerate, okay? And my mother has a plaque that when she passed away was the only thing I wanted of hers, and it's in my house right now, and it says, "Remember the tolerance." And people think that that has to do with just tolerating everything. It doesn't. What it means is know what you will tolerate and know what you won't. I mean, you have to know where those boundaries are. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing I think I've always been really good at, is establishing boundaries and saying, nope, you're not going there.
Yeah.
You know, or for myself, and saying, I don't need to go there. And I guarantee you, if I miss, my wife is right there going, Taylor, that does not feel good to me for you.
Right.
And then I'm like, well, why not? And boy, she'll probably listen to this, because I'm going to tell her, I think she's probably right 100% of the time. And I don't do it. Or I do it, whatever that is. Because sometimes it was lazy.
Yeah, well, or we forget.
Yeah.
We get dazzled by something, an opportunity or a decision.
So having someone else to bounce things off of when you have those kind of decisions, especially when they're gut-wrenching decisions. You know, I really feel this whole election period, I've just seen so many people just making gut-wrenching decisions, and it's really sad that it's come down to that. But those are the kinds of things that you really have to know who you are and what your principles are, so you can just make the best decision possible. And sometimes they're not great decisions. you're choosing, you got to choose whatever you think is best on any given day.
Yeah.
So,
But make a decision.
Yeah.
Don't sit on the fence. Make a decision. Commit to a path, because that ultimately sets something in motion.
Yes.
It creates action.
Yes.
And when a decision has been made and action is taken, you're headed somewhere now. And one of the worst things that can happen in our lives is when we stagnate by not making a decision. We get stuck. And I don't know how many times I've seen people do that. They just stay stuck for lack of making a decision.
And the reality is, that's a decision.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Not making a decision is a decision.
A decision to do nothing.
Yeah.
And then they get upset and angry that nothing happened.
Right. So I'm going to make
a perpetual thing.
I'm going to make a decision right now.
Okay.
The decision is, we got to move on to the Check-In with Reality segment. You've got questions, we've got answers. So this one, you know, it's not an official question, but it kind of made me sad. There's we in our audience, we've got people of all ages.
Yep.
And I love the old timers. I love the guys who've been doing it for 30 years. You know, mm-hmm. They've got strong opinions about how it needs to be done. But I just recently, we were talking with Mark Stoner. Mm-hmm. One of our friends of the show here, Mark owns a business, Ashbusters Chimney Service, here in Nashville, but he also runs Blue Collar University, which is a great opportunity. We've actually had listeners to the show who have gone through that program, and mm-hmm. I think it's really impactful what he's doing to help blue collar service business owners figure out how to run a home services company and do it at a high level. And so he invites people into their business, and he shows them, just kind of opens up the kimono. Here's how we do it here. Here's the systems. Here's our customer service formula that really works. And so I was talking to him. He mentioned that there was a guy that recently came through who's one of those guys, been doing it for 30, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, man, Mark, I wish I'd actually met you and gone through this process when I was younger, when I was, you know, 20, 25 years ago, 30, mm-hmm. 35 years ago, whatever. It would have changed my life. I would have been in such a different place than I am now.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of made me sad thinking this is a guy who's, for lack of a better term, he's on the sunset side of the island,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
He still has opportunity. He's still a human being that can make changes. I will never say that somebody is too old to change. You know,
you old better dogs. Not. And, you got to deal with me.
Old dogs and new tricks. I believe anybody who decides to make a change can make a change. My dad was 55 years old when he went. He was a dentist my entire life growing up.
Mm-hmm.
I was a senior in high school, and he decided to change careers and become a lawyer. And he went to law school my senior year of high school. Anybody can decide to do something different. Anybody can change. But here's somebody who thinks, maybe I can't. Maybe it's too late for me. I don't know. Mark didn't say that specifically, but mm-hmm. I just wondered, what's the conclusion after seeing a different way of doing it and knowing that you did it a way that led you down a path that wasn't as successful? Now you see a path that is incredibly successful, and you see how if you had made certain changes back then, you'd be at a different place. What do you tell that guy? Is it too late for him? And how does he, I mean, now you've got a business that is, I'm not going to say mired, but maybe stuck in some bad habits and set in some old ways. How do you help that guy figure out how to make the changes that he needs to make to create the business that is less stressful, more, you know, more of what he wants?
Well, first and foremost, I don't think you can make him do anything. I mean, he has to choose.
Did I say make?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
You did. Okay. How do you help him?
How
do you help him make? Well, can't really help anybody make a decision. They're going to make a decision whether they're too old or not. And, you know, I mean, I'm 59, and there are times that, you know, it even creeps into me is thinking, gosh, you know, God, I wish I was doing this and it was 20 years younger. And then I'm like, yeah, but I'm doing it now. I mean, it's like, okay, what would have happened if I was 20 years younger? I'd be 20 years younger, but I'm not. But I'm doing what I really enjoy now.
Yeah.
So just do it. I mean, that's the thing. It doesn't matter age. Age, I don't think, really matters unless it's a health issue. When it becomes a health issue, joints, backs, all those kind of things. But that's at any age. I'll just tell you, I've had back issues. My back issues was just as bad when I was 45 as it is right now when I'm 59.
I got a better back now than I did when I was 20.
That's right. You do. I think where people miss this is they don't realize their potential at any age. You know, we literally give more of our dreams away than not.
Wow.
And I think that is something that people need to think about is when you say that I'm too this to do that, all you're doing is you're giving your dreams away to something, to somebody else. Because if you don't do it, who will?
Mm-hmm.
If you're kicking and it's a dream and you want it, keep going for it. Because personally, even if I don't hit my dreams and I die tomorrow, I'm going to be much happier than if I just sit around and sulk about how I can't do anything because I'm too old, you know. And, I mean, what a life. Who wants to live that way?
Sure.
So my advice to this guy would be, you can be whatever you want to be at any age. Just do it.
Do the things
just
you
do
need
the
to
things
do.
You need to do. Now you have the path. Take the path. Walk the walk. Do it. And if you physically can't do the work, hire somebody who can. Figure out what you need to do in the office. You can do that. With a bad back, you can sit in a chair. You can answer the phone. There's a lot of things you can do to perpetuate moving forward, moving a business forward, and managing that business. And just because you found out and you're 60 years old, so lucky you, you found out. Look what you have ahead for you the next 10, 20 years. Because we ought to be able to live that long. I mean, right now they're saying the median age is really rising. And for those of us that are still around over the next 20, 30 years, there's no telling how long we'll live. So, man, don't despair.
If the sun's still shining, make hay.
That's right. And I'll just say one more thing. I've got a stepdad who's 82, fixing to be 80, just turned 83, actually. And, man, he's got arthritis. He's got feet issues. He's got all kinds of just little bitty dinky issues. He's a doctor. He's a retired doctor. He retired at the age of 80 because they were making them go on computers, and he just didn't have the wherewithal to do that. But guess what? He still sits at the board at the hospital. He works at a bank. He raises cattle, and he has a tree farm. So is he sitting around scratching his tail going, I'm too old? No. He's up doing stuff. I've never known anybody that was doing stuff that didn't die happy.
Sure.
They're doing things. Your stepdad, he's, what, 70?
No, 80.
80? And he still works, doesn't he? Every day.
Hard work.
Yeah. So
that guy never stops.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, you just keep going. Well, why do you keep going? Because you can.
Sure.
So keep going.
But I think a mindset of, challenging yourself to say, I'm never going to shy away from change and I'm going to embrace change. I think that's one of the things that sets a successful person apart from an unsuccessful person, is successful people embrace change and unsuccessful people resist change or fearful of change.
I would agree with you 100%.
So it really doesn't matter how old you are. You have the ability to change.
Yes. And the thing is, don't make excuses not to change. That's what I see that all the time.
And age can be an excuse. I'm just too old.
Yeah, I'm just too old.
And too old to make that big of a change in my business.
It can be I'm too young. I look too young. I mean, here's the other thing. I mean, we got a guy here that works for us, and for the longest time, he felt like, yeah, but if I go there, they're going to look at me and think I'm 12, and I'm like, doesn't matter.
Too young to lead.
Yeah, too young to lead. No, you're not. You're not too young to lead. You're not too fat to lead or skinny to lead or old to lead or what gender you are, anything. It doesn't matter. It's an excuse in your own head.
So that's what I'm taking away from this, is age is not the thing here. It's whatever you use to make an excuse not to do something you closer to what you really
want. That's right. And so when you don't get it and you complain, shut up.
Wow.
Because it's your own fault.
That's it. Look in the mirror, buddy. That's the guy making the decisions and who's got his hands on the steering wheel.
That's it. And let me tell you, I've had to look at myself. I've heard myself before complain about stuff and had to bite my tongue and go home and look in the mirror and say, dude, you either need to shut up or get up and go. And we all get to that place. I mean, that's not just, for being somebody that's older. I mean, you just cannot make excuses, because life comes at you no matter what, and you are going to get older. You're not going to stop it. I can guarantee I've tried. It doesn't work.
That's good stuff. That's really actually powerful. It's not about age. It's not about anything other than you just deciding, I'm going to do it this way. I'm going to do it different. I'm going to make changes that are positive and move me toward what I want.
Just got to do it.
Everybody can do that. All right, Good Nation, that's good. Let's talk with Angela. Our guest today has 22 years of helping people make positive life changes. She is a transformational teacher, mentor, speaker, and author. As a psychologist, a certified coach, and a meditation specialist, she has mentored her clients into transforming their thoughts, feelings, and emotions to create new patterns to fulfill their dreams and desires. Her methods to help decrease stress, clarify goals, increase optimism, and strengthen natural abilities. She's been featured on numerous radio shows as a keynote speaker at conferences and as a retreat facilitator all across the U.S. Today's show may be a deeper road than we've ever forged before on the show, but these are the things that every business owner must address if they are committed to reaching the goals and dreams they have for a full, rich, and meaningful life. So Get Nation, please join me in welcoming to the show today, Angela Blaha.
Thank you for having me.
I am excited about talking about some of these things. Taylor and I, about 6 or 7 years ago, started a meditation. It was about 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. Taylor's flashing five at me.
Well, it's
you
because
have a microphone in front of you.
I know, but I didn't want to interrupt you, so thanks. I said five. But we started this company, and we were really struggling. And so one of the things that I just came across was something about meditation to really kind of get your mindset right. And I talked to Carter, and we were like, man, we've tried a whole lot of other things. What do we got to lose, And so we jumped in, and it really was the start of our business changing. So we talked about this not too long ago, that when we started meditating is actually when our business started moving in the direction that we had dreamed.
So I'm curious, Angela, have you seen transformations like that in other clients?
Absolutely. Actually, I see that in my own business and my husband's business, right? And it's just, that's what happens. Like, because what happens is with meditation, it releases the stress from the body. That's really all meditation does. It's an antidote to stress. Because when you're in stress mode, you can't get clear messages. You can't get clear thinking patterns, right? And you can't create newness because your body is so stressed and the mind is so stressed that you're just in rote memory at that time. And so when you can release the stress from your body, that's when all the pure wisdom comes in, right? The pure knowledge, the expanded, avenues, the infinite possibilities that you can take within your business and your life, that's when it comes in.
I think it's interesting in all of the study that I've done about meditation, there are a lot of different things. You can talk to people who talk about it as a spiritual practice, but then you can talk to some other people that look at it more from the scientific or the health benefits of just purely seeing how it can do things like change the brainwave patterns and lower blood pressure, cause a deeper sense of calm, and all of the hormones and chemical changes that happen in the body just simply through deep breathing exercises and those sorts of things. Talk a little bit about the benefits from all the different aspects. How can meditation change somebody's, what are the benefits that you see?
So this is how meditation works. When we use it as an antidote to stress, it does relieve, the stressors that are placed on the body, the blood pressure that's high, the hormones that are, increased in stress, the anxiety, the insomnia, the addictions, the blood sugar, all of those things are increased, right? When the body is completely stressed, all of those things, infection, all of those things increase. And what happens when you move into a meditative state, which is just calming the body and the mind, not that we have to completely get rid of thought, because that's not possible. We're thinking beings. But we do want to calm the body and the mind enough so that we can slip into what's called or referred to as the gap. And the gap is these moments of time that are in between each of our thoughts. And in these little pockets, these little spaces of time, is where you move more into your spiritualness, into the flow of who you are, why you're here. You become more clear about your purpose. You become more clear about what your, what your next job will be, or what your next thought will be, or what your next action will be. And so throughout that, once you move into that little piece of time and it's called the gap, then that's where infinite possibilities reside. But we don't get to this little space of time when the body is all stressed out.
So let me ask you real quickly. We've got a lot of our guys do, they ride motorcycles. They do, play golf. Some of them are cyclists. Some of them do, CrossFit. And a lot of them will tell me that they get the same type of benefits from those activities. So, which I understand. I mean, I think anytime that you are doing something that you're focused on, you're getting yourself away from the stress, other stresses of life. So what would you tell somebody that does those activities? Would you think a meditative practice to where, they're in silence and that particular type of meditation, is there a benefit to both? Is one better than the other? Should you do both? Could one be, a substitute for the other? Kind of, what are your thoughts on that?
When I teach meditation, I tell people do what works. So if your thing is silence, I prefer silence because my mind is constant chatter. When I move into a silence, then the mind has been trained to say, oh, okay, I gotta calm down here, right? My husband, who loves to archery hunt, that's his meditation. When he goes out there and he becomes one with nature, that's when he comes home with some brilliant ideas of how to move our business forward.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever works, I say do it. And just keep in mind that meditation changes over time because we are constantly changing beings. And so meditation changes. right? One day it's a moving meditation if you're cycling or if you're riding your bike or, you know, if you're out fishing in a boat. The next day it could be, you know, a food meditation or a mantra meditation or silence. You know, whatever it is, yes, that's what I teach, is do whatever works.
Fantastic.
I like that flexibility. Yeah. I know that having a lot of ways of accessing that mm-hmm. state is really beneficial. For me, yeah. if I'm in a high-pressure situation, I'll give you the perfect example, and I know that our listeners can identify with this. You wake up in the morning with the phone ringing by your bedside, your cell phone, and it's somebody at work who has gotten there before you have, and, you know, gotten there early that day, and there's water all over the floor, or there's that thing that's happened. And so your day starts off high energy, solving problems, dealing with the stress of things. And then it's like just magically the world throws every single thing it can think of at you, one thing after another, or five things at a time sometimes, and your phone is blowing up and things are happening, things are going wrong. You're responding, you're keeping up, but it's really taking a toll on your mental reserves. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, for me, I've just learned this simple breathing exercise that has really helped me take that stress level and just reduce it, you know, by orders of magnitude. I mean, it just really brings it down, helps me clear my head. It gives me clarity. And that's the thing for a business owner to, in a high decision mode, you know, decision-making mode, where you're just getting thrown everything all at once, to be able to have clarity and see what is going on and see it well without the stress, because the stress does cloud the ability to make those decisions. That's what has helped me really, you know, and I'll take walks and do those things too, but just in that moment, if I can't take a 30-minute walk, if I can't walk away from it and find silence for an extended period of time because the demands on my day are such that I just can't find that time, if I can just take 5 minutes, go to the bathroom and just sit there and breathe, you know, in this exercise to just sort of bring the stress down and relax my body, it's amazing what a difference that makes.
Right. And that's another key point to meditation, is you don't have to sit for hours on end in a meditative state, right? That's another one of the myths, is you can just take a few moments, do some deep breathing, do some, you know, mind clearing kind of exercises, and then come back. Right? We are under so much stress throughout a day that we need these little tiny periods of just to release stress. And then you can come back and you can be, you know, magnificent at what you do. So sitting at a stoplight, you know, and I tell people when I'm teaching meditation, I say, well, when you're at a stoplight, take a couple nice deep breaths, right? Release some of the stress that you've gained over time throughout the day. And then move on. So you can meditate for, you know, short periods of time, or you can meditate for longer periods of time. The point is not to have any judgment around, oh, I'm not doing it right, or I'm not doing it long enough, right? Because then that puts you in the mental thinking, and then you're never going to come back to meditation.
Yeah, and you also talk about intuition. And how does the meditation and kind of relieving that stress, how does that play into with how you feel about trusting your intuition?
Well, our intuition is just really our soul self or our energy self that comes out and pretty much guides us throughout our life. When we use our thinking mind, our you know, our brain as our thinking modality, answers for us to flow through life are not always there, because the mind is trained to believe whatever you want to tell it. But when we use our intuition, which is, you know, our guidance, our internal guidance, that internal wisdom that helps us to just be in flow and ease and grace in life, that comes out when we move into meditation and we begin to, you know, trust it more, begin to trust ourselves. Right? Because we don't make good decisions without trusting ourselves and who we are. And so I teach people, you know, that this is probably going to happen. Intuition is probably going to start coming through in your daily meditation practice. trust who you are, trust those bombs of wisdom that we get, and act upon them, because chances are they're exactly perfect for the moment in time that you're living in.
So tell me how that reflects on a business owner. I mean, here's a guy, he's extremely busy. He's a blue-collar guy. He doesn't know much about meditation. He hears this program and says, well, it's kind of worked for Carter and Taylor, so, you know, let me try it. Where would you tell them to start?
So I'll use my husband, for example. So we own an automotive business, and he purchased it from his father, I don't know, probably 8-10 years ago. But anyway, it went from a couple hundred thousand dollar business into a multi-million dollar business. And so what he started doing was he noticed how calm I was throughout all the decisions that we had to make. And I've been a meditator for years. And he said, one day he said, you know, maybe I'll try that meditation stuff.
I can that understand that. Yeah. That was Carter. Yeah, that was exactly right. And just to note, my mother introduced me to meditation when I was a kid. So yeah. I've known about it for a long time. I didn't always practice it. So right. I was a believer because I saw kind of what it helped her do. But Carter, boy, he wasn't.
Right. But, you know, we started small, right? He started small. So what I did was we woke up in the morning and he didn't want to sit to meditate. So I said, okay, we'll just lie in bed and meditate. And so I did a guided meditation at that time. And we just did for 15 minutes before we even got out of bed. So start small. Don't think that you have to conquer the world in the beginning, and allow it to change and allow it to grow. Now he goes out to his tree stand and he sits out there in nature and becomes more balanced and lets his intuition come out and play, because really that's where you can use the amazing ideas that you can get by just calming the mind and the body down enough for your intuition to come in.
Oh, that is so true.
Yeah. And that's where the beauty is, right? That's the beauty of meditation, is when you have those amazing ideas that just come in and you're like, gosh, how did I even think of that? Well, you didn't. Your intuition gave it to you.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it's there all along. It's just that right. Constant chatter of the stress of any given day for a business owner masks that intuition or masks that creativity it's mm-hmm. there. It's just not accessible. And so by quieting your mind a little bit, those thoughts can come to the surface or to the forefront, and then you go, wow, it's amazing.
Right.
That's those exactly. ideas in the shower, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that really is mine. I mean, in the morning when I shower, my wife is like, oh, your shower, you take it too hot a shower. You don't need to be. But that's when I can just let that hot water just absolutely cover me and just relax and not think of anything for just a minute. It is amazing some of the stuff that,
right.
you know, I'm like, oh, why didn't I think of that? I'm going to go do that today.
Exactly. I have a nephew who's a rock climber. And so every weekend he goes out for 2 or 3 hours and just climbs mountains. And he comes home with some brilliant stuff.
It's so, amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. So do whatever it takes to get to that space.
Yeah.
Okay. So for the beginner who's thinking, yeah, you know, I've already got a spiritual practice, you know, I'm that's not for me, or that's not my particular brand of spirituality. What would you say to that person who's resistant to this from the spiritual side? Are there benefits just purely from a health perspective that you don't have to get into the spiritual nature of meditation at all?
Yeah. So what happens while you're calming the mind and the body is the heart rate lowers, your sweating, you know, gets more relaxed. The blood pressure normalizes, you consume less oxygen, so you expel less carbon dioxide. The adrenal glands, you know, produce less adrenaline and less cortisol, which we know, you know, creates problems within the body if there's way too much. Your immunity increases, you get sick a lot less. The anti-aging, which is a big deal right now. you know, and so it's just, it compounds, like the diabetes, the obesity issues, they start to narrow or become less because you begin to listen to the body. You begin to listen to the body and says, and you ask the body, what do you need today, right? What food is going to nutrient, fill me with nutrients and, you know, create maximum capacity for my day. So there's all kinds of benefits. It's not just a spiritual practice, and meditation really is not, it's not a religion.
Right.
Right. Which gets messed up sometimes because people think, ooh,
Right. Well, it's, you know, been traditionally known as for gurus, right? Who go out and just meditate and that's all they do all day long. And that's their spiritual practice. But it's becoming more mainstream. And it's a practice, it's a tool that we can use to help us flow in life.
If these guys need some help with that, like you talked about the guided meditation, do you have a recommendation of where they might go, what they might tap into, what's out there?
Yes, I have, on my website, I have 30-day guided meditations as well. But, you know, there's lots of, you can go on the internet and just type in, you know, guided meditations and find something that resonates with you. There are drumming meditations where people just listen to a drum or binaural beat, that kind of meditation. You know, the guys at our business, they like the guided. Especially in the beginning, they like guided meditations because we're not trained to just stop thinking or slow down our thinking. Right? Yeah. So the guided sort of help you ease into that. The other thing is just be out in nature. You know, if you can just take your shoes off and be out in nature for 5-10 minutes a day, and just listen to what nature has to tell you.
Those nature sounds can be great.
Yeah, and the smells. You know, the nature smells and the, so, you know, just take it small. You can type it in on the internet. You can find a million things to do on the internet for meditation. But, you know, have someone come and teach you. Right?
Yeah.
I travel all over the world and teach meditation. So yeah, don't be afraid to ask others about it.
You know, back to the guided meditation, that's how I first was introduced to some of the breathing exercises and that instruction for meditation. And for a beginner who's never meditated, that was incredibly useful to me just to teach me some of the practical position, you know, how to relax your body from the head to the toe and how to breathe in a way that causes that relaxation response. And to have that little voice in your head that, you know, somebody who's guiding you through that in a soothing and relaxing way really helped me find a practice, a meditation practice, a standard way that I just do that. And it took a little while, but once I learned it, I could access it no matter where I was, like you said, you know, at a stoplight or, you know, in an elevator or just between, you know, this and that, there were those little opportunities that I could find to now instead of having to have that meditation guided by somebody in my ear listening on headphones, I was able to just do that myself and for myself. And I really liked that guided meditation in the beginning because it really did help me learn it and learn a kind of a standard way of doing it.
Right. The other thing that I teach people in the beginning is doing writing meditation. You know, if you like to write, is just sit down and just start writing. Don't think about what you're writing, just start writing. And maybe for the first 10 lines, this is a dumb exercise, right? until the mind gets bored, and then the mind goes off and does something else. And then all of a sudden, you know, the intuition, the soul comes out and it just starts writing. And maybe it gives you answers for questions that you've been pondering, or, you know, maybe it just gives you some insight about life. Whatever it is, writing is a good beginner exercise. If you like to draw, or if you like to paint, or, you know, do any of the creative kind of things, dance is a good one in the beginning. You just put on some music and you just dance. You just allow your body to be free.
That's my wife.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She likes it.
I teach mindfulness practices to like ADHD kids and adults. And what we do there is we just sort of concentrate on a room. So like what's placed in a room, right? That's kind of almost a form of meditation, is just to be in awareness of what's surrounding you. And then go into the other room and see if you can like visualize it in your mind. That sort of trains the brain and the mind to notice things. Because really, when we move into meditation and the mind gets more clear, you begin to notice all kinds of new things that you've never noticed before because the mind was so filled with chatter. And so that's one of the things that happened too, right? Is you become like, there's so much clarity with your thinking, but then the awareness of your surroundings and people and how people respond to you becomes in your awareness as well.
Wow.
So there's lots of changes that happen, and we may not be conscious of them, or we may just, you know, take it for granted that those things, that we noticed those things before. But if you're really paying attention, you begin to notice, oh, I didn't even notice that the aura was blue. I always thought it was white. Right.
Well, what I'm hearing is that meditation really is something that your mind and your body already know how to do intuitively, yeah, or instinctively. It's tapping into that intuition and that instinct and allowing it to sort of just do what it does on its own almost.
Right. You're just basically bringing it back to a state of balance.
Yeah.
Which, that's what we're programmed for. You know, the bodies are really programmed to be in a state of balance. But because we go through so many stressors throughout a day, and we don't have enough time in a day to release those stressors, because it takes about 2 to 3 hours to release one stressor that you have in a day. And now, you know, back in the day when it was just the saber-toothed tiger that you had to fear, now we have 8 to 15 stressors throughout a day. That's just an average. And it takes 2 to 3 hours for each stressor to be released from the body. So we don't have enough hours in a day to release all the stress that we go through. We have to help ourselves along.
Yeah. Well, talk about, because I know there's a tendency sometimes to, you know, and just the habit and routine of a day, a really hard day, mm-hmm, you come home, you pop open a beer, maybe it's 2 or 3 beers, and you watch a little television. Talk about that as compared to a meditative practice. Are there, you know, what's the difference there really? I mean, because I know a lot of people that think that's how you relax.
Well, when your mind is in constant movement, that is not relaxation, right? So if you're sitting in front of a TV or sitting in front of a game, you know, a game that you're playing on the internet or iPad or whatever, your mind is in constant motion. When you move into meditation or you use meditation, your mind slows down and you begin to see those little gaps, or you feel, or you get to experience the gaps where your intuition lies. If your mind is in constant movement, watching TV or whatever, that you can never find the gap there, right? That becomes an addiction then. Not a meditation, it's an addiction.
Yeah, you're using something else to mask or
try to cover up.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
Exactly. And you're still not releasing stress. You know, if you think about it, you come home and you sit in front of a TV or you play games on your iPad, you go to bed, your mind is still in motion. Chances are you're not sleeping very well, right? Or if you are, you're waking up during the night, or, you know, you wake up and you're still exhausted because you haven't calmed your mind down enough to disconnect from the world, from all the problems, from all the stress, and your body is still in motion.
It's interesting that you mentioned sleep, because I just read, probably in the last 2 weeks, a very interesting article about sleep and stress and all those things that go in it. And they said exactly what you just said. that it you cannot rest well if you are stimulating your brain right to the minute that you go to bed.
Exactly.
Yeah. So putting some kind of barrier between that stimulus and bedtime, and then creating something in that space to kind of bring you down to where you can rest peacefully.
Right.
So, yeah, interesting.
Yeah, the other thing I teach people is to totally disconnect from work, disconnect from your spouse, your partner, your children, you know, your daily stressors throughout life. Just disconnect. Pull your energy into yourself before you go to sleep, because that allows the body to calm down.
So I'm going to have to disconnect from you, Carter.
Yes. Yes, do it.
You know, just listening to your voice, Angela, if I don't know if you mentioned that you have some guided meditation products. I don't know if it's your voice on those tapes, but if it is, I would totally buy it, because I'm just the tone of your voice and the pace of your voice is very soothing.
Thanks. Yes, it is my voice.
Excellent. Well, let's just real quickly then tell people where they can go to find out more information about what you do and some of the products that you offer.
So I have a book released. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I teach meditation all over the world. So I can, I've got it down to, I can come and teach it in an hour and 4 hours, 8 hours. I can create a whole retreat out of it. And you can find everything on my website, which is www.angelablaha.com. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn. So you can find me practically everywhere. That's pretty much my passion, is teaching people to just calm down enough, calm the body and the mind down enough so that you can live on purpose. There's nothing greater than, you know, living life to the fullest. And that's what we're here to do, not to be stressed.
Yes, absolutely.
Fantastic.
This has been a great interview, Angela. We always like to end our interview, though, by asking our guest for a quote that has meant something to them in their own journey. And I'm wondering what your quote might be, and if you'd tell us a little bit about what it means to you.
So my quote comes from my book, and it says, "In order to divert fear, you must understand your love." And for me, it wasn't my fears that kept me from living life. It was the depth and the expansiveness of my own love. And so when I started meditating, I got to experience what that really was. And now I teach everyone else to experience their love, because love heals, love, you know, makes you feel great, makes you feel good, makes you feel blissful. And that's what we're here to do, is to be in love with the world, the sky, people, animal kingdoms. We're not here to be in fear. And when we're stressed, chances are we're in fear.
I like that.
Perfect.
Angela, thank you for being on the show today.
Oh, thank you guys. This is fun.
Angela Blaha, everyone. And if you are interested in connecting with her and learning more, then take a look in the show notes. We're going to have a link there to her website. And if you're interested in connecting with us, you can do that simply by going over to the Get Nation Facebook page. The Facebook group. You can find that by going to guysintrucks.com/GetNation. That'll redirect you right over to our Facebook group, where you can learn all sorts of good information from other guests of the show, from people who are connecting there, business owners just like you, looking for education, mentoring, and encouragement. We hope that you'll join us there. Until the next episode of the Guys in Trucks show, we are growing every single day, and we're glad to have you listening. See you next time. If you have suggestions for how we could make this weekly show even better for you, we'd love to hear your thoughts. You can send an email to guys@guysintrucks.com or leave us a message on the Guys in Trucks show hotline, sponsored by Spark Marketer. And that's toll-free 855-646-3538, extension 448. As you might imagine, we're all over the web in social media and your favorite podcast apps. But still, the best way to make sure you don't miss any of the great content, episodes, special offers, and extras we have every week is simply to drop your email in the subscribe box right there on our homepage at guysintrucks.com. And while you're there, you'll find the complete show notes, special offers, and links from today's episode, along with all of our previous episodes, available for listening right now. Also, if you like what we're doing and want to let us know, we'd love it if you'd take the time to leave us a great review in iTunes. Thanks to the crew that puts our show together every week, Aaron Blaze, our production engineer, Jessica Wynn, our show coordinator, and Jonathan Sanders, our social media manager. And a special thanks to you, Git Nation, for tuning in every single week. It's an honor and a privilege, in our very small way, to serve the people that serve the world. We'll see you next time, right here on Guys and Trucks.